So now we're on chapter 8 of the Nectar Devotion, Offenses to be Avoided. In the supplementary Vedic literature, there is the following list of 32 offenses in the matter of serving the Lord. Supplementary Vedic literature, this means the main literature means the Vedas, the four Vedas, and those literatures that are connected with them, like the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and the Upanishads. So that is what you call the main Vedic literature. Supplementary means smriti. What is written. So, and this would be coming from the Pancharatras. The different Pancharatras are what is called the Agamas. Agama means that which comes from. So the Veda is the main, and then the Agamas are those that come from the Veda. So the Pancharatra comes from the Veda, the Tantras, like the, Gotamiya Tantra that we follow, or the, what's that one, Yamala, that we follow also? Something Yamala, you know? I can't remember the name of it. But it's also one of the Satvic Tantras. So all these are coming from the Veda. So they mention these offenses, which then Rupa Goswami has put here. And I think Sanatana Goswami also gives the same listings in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. One should not enter the temple of the deity in a car or palanquin or with shoes on the feet. So one comes to offer respect to the Lord, so one will not come in with shoes on or being carried in the palanquin like that, either of these, or some kind of vehicle like this. During the flood, no motorcycles, no limousines, no. Somehow during the flood, then it seems to be not so much of a problem to come in on a boat, but like that. But in normal situations, one would come in, barefoot, walking, like this, in a humble mood. So the whole idea is that you're coming for the Lord. He is the most wealthiest, influential, aristocratic, senior, person. That therefore, in front of him, we will come in a humble mood. So we do not come, even though we may come up to the temple. Outside the temple, we may be a big person. But when coming into the temple, then we'll come very, very pleasantly. We see even also like Rukmini Devi, when she was going to the temple, she would walk like that. They're going to the temple. If they're going somewhere else, they'll go in the palanquins and this and that. If it's a long distance, then they may take a palanquin, but they generally will not ride right up to the door. They'll stop at some distance, get out, and then be able to walk so that they can create that humble mood in themselves. So always that time must be given, that one should know how far to ride one's vehicle, whatever it may be, and where to stop, and then from there you take where you start walking, like that. Then, 2, one should not fail to observe the various festivals for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Janmashtami and Ratha Yatra. So these are there for the Lord's pleasure, and they're given because we can take part. This is the whole idea. The Lord is taking, his pastimes are going on all day. 24 hours a day, the pastimes are going on. Deity worship means we get the opportunity to take part in this worship. We get to do something. So the festivals are specifically meant for us. So if we don't take part, what is the use of the Lord arranging them? So this is the idea, is that these festivals are there so that we can take part. So we must not avoid them. We must take part in them, to whatever degree and whichever way we can, like that. That we should, if we can either watch or follow or different things like that. 3, one should not avoid bowing down before the deity. So one should always bow down. So generally we see that we are bowing down in cases where it's obvious. We're going into the temple. We are, going to offer our obeisance to the deity. We're bowing down like that. There are some people who come in the temple, don't know these things, walk around and, sightsee and point out this and that and then walk out. Don't bow down. So that, of course, is improper. But this also is the subtle aspects where there is times when one might think to bow down, but one will think, well, I'm way out of the way, or I'm in a back corner, or I kind of just saw the deity, or different situations like that, or I have something to do, I got to leave quickly. These little subtle things also, one should always consider, you know, like that, like you're chanting behind Prabhupada or something, you come around the corner, you want to see if someone's there, but when you come around the corner, you see the deity. Or you could just think, well, I offered obeisances before, and like that, and I'm chanting now, and then like that. But one doesn't do that. One will think, one offers obeisances. So one should not avoid offering obeisances in these simple situations. Whatever it may be, you know, you're walking by, standing in the courtyard, talking to somebody, and the Sringadev opens. You can see from outside. You can say, well, I'm not inside. But, you know, one should offer obeisances. One can see. If one can see the deity clearly, then one could offer obeisances. Then four, one should not enter the temple to worship the Lord without having washed one's hands and feet after eating. So the Lord is very particular. Deity worship means cleanliness and timeliness. So these two. So if we've eaten, we have to wash the hands and feet like that. Mouth, of course, is being done. But the hands and feet also have to be done like that. So, yeah. Because when one eats, even though one doesn't necessarily drop things on the feet, the area is considered contaminated, like that. So when one stands up to leave and all that, the feet are contaminated. Though they don't have anything on them, they are not dirty, they are impure. It's two different things. Purity and dirtiness is two different things. Dirtiness, you can see, it's visible to the eye or to the touch, like that, or to the smell. That's one thing. Purity, then, is more subtle than that. Yes,
Martin. Then, in this case, the whole body is considered impure?
Not so much, because, I mean, if you roll on the ground there with your whole body, yes.
So when we eat, then, like, the whole area is impure, the whole
It's not impure like that, it's by touch. See, it's impurity goes by touch. So something's impure, like let's say we've eaten with our hand. Our hand's impure. It doesn't like go up the arm and then go all over us and then the whole room and then out of the room to the building and then the whole place and then slowly, slowly the whole universe. No. I mean, because that's what the mind will do. Yeah, because everything's... It's because skin is considered pure, like that, in its own right. That's why, like, the skins of an animal, you know, would be used in sacrifice and that, because they're pure. I mean, of course, they have to be cleaned, you know, it's not the... You know, they shouldn't still be attached to the animal, you know, like that. So skin is considered pure. So when you eat and your hands are contaminated, only the hands are contaminated. It doesn't go all the way up the arm, unless you're eating pongal. Then it goes then up to the elbow you have to wash. But you don't know pongal. Pongal is a special South Indian khichdi. It's about at least 20%, if not more, ghee. So when you eat it, as you're eating it, the ghee will run down the arm and drip off the elbow. If it does that, it's good pongal. If it doesn't do that, it's all right. But if it does that, then it's considered excellent. So, I think there's a saying, pongal is eaten up to the elbow, right? Something like that. Yeah, so like that. But if you're not eating pongal, you know, or you're not like below 3 years old, you know, then you eat with the hands, only the hands and the mouth and the feet will become considered contaminated. You know, I mean, if you're eating and you spill something all over yourself, then of course. But if you haven't done that, you're careful, then it's the hands, the mouth, the feet are contaminated. The hands gross, the mouth gross, and the feet it's in between, you know, but they should be washed.
And so the cloth is also contaminated.
The cloth, if it's cotton, is considered impure for deity worship. It's not impure for wearing around for anything else. It's impure for deity worship, cotton cloth. Silk is also contaminated by eating. Wool is not. So if one's doing deity worship, generally one will remove the cloth one's wearing for deity worship, put on some other cloth, eat, and then wash your hands, your mouth, with your feet, put on your puja cloth, and then you can go back on the altar. There's no need of taking a bath or anything.
Both upper and lower cloth?
Say again?
Both upper and lower cloth.
Both upper and lower cloth, yeah. So generally one wouldn't wear that. That's the advantage of silk. Silk does not become contaminated by taking on and off like that. So many times they'll use silk, and then for eating they'll put on some cotton or some simple cloth, eat in that, clean themselves nicely, and then put on their puja cloth and then go back on the altar. Like that, that would be...
Cotton cloth you take off, eat in another cloth, and if you put the cotton cloth back, will be considered...
It's technically not considered the best. It's not considered as clean as when it's put on the first time. But if that's what one has, then one does that. Okay. One has facility for silk, then all the better. But if not, then it's fine. One just shouldn't eat in it, go into the bathroom in it, like that.
Is that wool also considered pure?
Wool's pure. It's not contaminated by touch or air. So that doesn't mean that if on the edge of your corner of your chutter you drop some contaminated thing, that corner where the thing is not dirty. It means if you touch that corner where the dirty, you know, substance is, your hand will become contaminated. But if you touch any other part, you won't become. So just by taking that corner and washing that corner, then the whole thing still remains pure. That place becomes purified, but the rest of it never became contaminated anyway. Like that, that's wool. But only wool's like that. Silk is not like that, though some will say it is, but it's not. Like that. Wool, you know, silk, if it's, you eat in it, you sleep in it, you wear it into the bathroom, it's contaminated. Wool, it's not recommended you sleep in it and use it for puja because of all the just, it develops an odor like that. But wool can be purified by putting it out in the sun, or if it's lightly contaminated in the moon or the wind. You know, contaminated means it gets old or stale, the smells or like that. It's been worn for a long time. And if not, then by washing with, you know, these soap berries and other things like that. Cotton is only purified by water. Silk, if it's had something impure on it, it's purified by water. But if it's something simple, you know, like, how you say, or it doesn't act, it's some contamination by air or by wearing it while you eat or you took rest in it. You know, just you took a nap in it, you know. Like that, not a serious, you didn't sleep at night, you took a 15-minute nap. It can be purified by sun, moon, or wind. Like that. But one has to be very careful. These are not magic things. Many times devotees take it magic. I can take this filthy, dirty wool chudder, I can stick it out in the moonlight for an hour, and now it's, you know, perfectly clean. Wool, you can tell it's clean. You take a dirty chudder, you put it out in the sun. And if you've left it long enough, the sun's strong enough, when you pick it up, it'll smell like it's freshly washed, though you never washed it in water. If it smells like that, it's been purified by the sun, moon, or wind. If it doesn't, it still smells dirty, then you have to leave it longer or wash it. But it's like that. You can take wool, put it out in the sun, and it'll smell like it's freshly washed. Like that, that's the nature of it. That doesn't take off dirt. That takes off just contaminated, just from wearing and odors and that. But dirt doesn't come off by sun and moon and wind. That is only by washing it. That's done. Yes?
So Maharaj, it's a related question that I have been consistently asking. It's, I think you made the difference between contamination and dirt.
Yeah.
Or something is purified and something is clean, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's about prasadam, about eating and contamination.
Huh.
Eat prasadam. Prasadam is non-different from Krishna's.
Right.
And yet, the term is contaminated.
Huh.
You are not dirty, but contaminated.
Huh.
And also on the same reasoning, this prasadam, which is non-different from Krishna, after enter our body, is transformed into stew with something abominable.
Yeah.
Now, what's the rationale behind, you know, this transformation from saint to abominable, like, you know, something that is purifying, like, yeah. You know, I don't know if I put the question.
Yeah, no, it's very simple. Yeah. The problem is us. That's all. It was a story that Nara Narayan Prabhu told on the airplane when, like 300 devotees, we hired a whole jumbo jet in 74, and we're coming from New York to Delhi. And so on there, because he liked to tell stories, so he told us one story. And so then there was this Brahmin. And this Brahmin had gone out into the field to relieve himself. And after relieving himself, he looks back and, you know, has this disgusting look on his face, you know. He looks at the stool. And the stool asks the Brahmin, it says, why are you making this face? And he says, because you're so abominable, like that. And he says, then the stool says, really, I'm abominable? Are you sure? He says, yes. He says, what about this aspect? Just a few hours before, I was wonderful, fragrant, you know, very nice-looking prasadam. And after only a few hours' association with you, look what's happened to me. Like that. So, the problem is us. It's not the prasad's problem. The problem is us.
So we are what?
It means the body is contaminated.
Our body.
Yeah. So the reason is hands become contaminated because they go in our mouth. Like that. If you pick up something and don't touch your mouth, you just throw it into the mouth. Like you sometimes see Prabhupada would do that. It mentions... He would cut an apple into little pieces and then he'd take a piece and just pop it into his mouth without touching. Your hand doesn't become contaminated. It's impure, but it's not contaminated. It needs to be washed. Impure means it's not fit for doing sacrifice. Because it has touched prasad. Now if I touch something else that's boga, then that's not proper. Because Krishna is transcendental. Everything in the spiritual realm is transcendental. But that doesn't mean we pick up a rock and offer it to Krishna to eat. We cook nice things for him to eat, even though it's transcendental. So within transcendence, there is differentiation. Madhva calls this taratamya, is that there's differentiation in transcendental. Because the Mayavadis try to make it all one, it's all transcendental. But within transcendental, for the purpose of lila and pastime and exchange between the Lord and the devotees, you make a difference between what's nice and what's not nice. Right? The sun is transcendental in Vrindavan, but Mother Jashoda is worried that her son is going to be affected by the sun, so she has to take an umbrella. Also, all the lions, tigers, and bears, they're also transcendental. But Mother Jashoda is worried that they'll come and attack Krishna, like that. So then Balaram and Mandali Bhadra and all the other older cowherd boys, they have to go out with swords and sticks and all kinds of weaponry, so that Mother Jashoda is satisfied that Krishna will be protected. Like that. So it's for pastime, these things are there. So once something is touched that's prasad, it can't be touched to anything that's boga. Therefore, the hands are washed. Like after taking charanamrita, your hand is not contaminated, unless you lick it or something. But if you just sip the water, it's not. But you wash it because you may be touching other things. Right? So like that, there's a differentiation in transcendental for the purpose of service and lila, rasa. Right? All devotees are devotees, but you make a difference between the gopis and Mother Jashoda and the cowherd boys and the servants and the cows. Right? You don't see Krishna out doing rasa dance with the cows, you know, like that. But, you know, it's just, you just don't see it, you know, like that. So there is this differentiation like that.
So it becomes contaminated after coming in contact with the body.
Contaminated with the body. But
the body.
Pure and impure, it depends upon what is happening in puja. You know, like if you touch your leg, then your hand needs to be washed. You know, if you touch the floor, it has to be washed. You know, or you touch an item, you offer it, then it has to be washed before you touch the next item. Like that. So these are the subtleties of the external, of the gross. Because there is the subtleties of the internal. Right? We have to remember Krishna. and then that will create the purity. It means the body has to be pure, the place has to be pure, the items have to be pure, our consciousness has to be pure, like that, because the Lord is pure. So if we want to move with the Lord, we also have to be pure. Right? You can associate with something that you are on the same, how you say, the same quality as. Like a radio. If your radio then it matches the frequency of the broadcasting station, there's connection. But if it's not, it doesn't work. And only with a radio can you pick that up, you know, unless you have enough fillings or something. But otherwise, you need a radio. Right? You can't take a, you know, an apple and, you know, try to tune into the radio. Right? It won't work. So you have to have what is the common nature then creates rasa. This is a very important aspect. Is rasa is created that there has to be a common point. You know, there has to be commonality. Just like you have, you know, friends is just equals. So they have equal nature, equal like this. You have parents and children. They're not equal in age or maturity, but in the connection, either biological, they have a connection there, or as a teacher, or as a manager, and there's someone leading, someone following. Right? Someone has experience and they're training them. So that makes the parental rasa. Right? One doesn't know what to do, one doesn't care. The other one, they have to care and they have to spend the time to train. So maybe the common point there then comes is these things. So the Vedas talk a lot about this. Where is that joint between the two? And what is the cause of that coming together? Right? You know? Just like you have the mother, you have the father. So the place where it comes together is the child. That's the sandhi. That's the overlap between the father and the mother. And the cause for that is the desire for children. Right? This is Taittiriya Upanishad. Like that. So like that it gives many different examples. Is that you have something. What is it? You have, what is it? Speech? Vidya. In knowledge, then you have the teacher, you have the student. And then the lesson, what is being taught, is the sandhi, where they come together. And the desire to know, or the desire to impart knowledge, is the cause of the joining of the relationship. Like that. So like that you have everything has that. Everything has a joint. There's no, you don't have a clean line where there's no connection. There's always an overlap. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. While taking prasadam, if I touch something with my left hand, does this become contaminated?
It means if it's something for puja, yes. If it's just something around you, no. You know, you move your bead bag or this or that or stuff like that, no. But if without having watched with your left hand and you touch some item for puja, then it's contaminated. So in that state, before cleaning, you won't go into pure areas that are used for puja and stuff like that. You know, one would be careful. Or if you're doing puja, you wouldn't go in an area where people are eating. Let's say that they are serving prasad in the temple room. So before going into the deity room or the deity kitchen or, you know, paraphernalia room or like that, you'll first go clean. And if you're doing puja, you may come up to the door, the temple room, to look for something. You won't go inside, walk around, and without washing your feet, go back inside. Like that, to the deity room. You have to wash your feet. Because by touch, then it's considered not clean.
Why the left hand is considered impure?
It's part of the scene. You know? They go together. Like that. It's not contaminated. It wouldn't be contaminated, meaning from dirtiness. It would be on the subtle platform. like that. So like if you drink your, if you pick up the glass with your left hand and drink the water without touching your mouth, the water is not considered contaminated, nor your hand. But it's still, you couldn't use that for puja. It's a, you get into, in deity worship, there's so many levels of subtleties of purity. Like that. That's what you're dealing with. Because from the gross, you go to the subtle. Like that. Things come from subtle to gross. But because of us being gross, generally we start with the gross and reverse the system to get back. You know? Like that. So when we understand these things, then we understand the subtleties. Otherwise, rasa ba simply means dirtiness in rasa, a contamination in the rasa. That there's something that doesn't match, it's in the wrong place, it doesn't belong there. So to be able to see those subtleties, you have to be able to catch the subtleties of the mind and of the pure levels of purity. And to catch those, you have to be able to understand the grosser ones. Like that, of the body. Though they're very subtle, you know. I mean, it's, remember, it was very common, the, you know, American tradition is you eat a sandwich or something at school and you lick your fingers off and wipe them on the back of your jeans and they're considered clean, you know, because there's nothing on your fingers. They're clean, right? Like that. But they're not pure. So then the idea of purity, that's a whole, like, revelation for the Western mind, you know. Or after you eat, you know, then very aristocratic, they bring you a little bowl, the lemon in it, a little salt, and
make a lemon juice and
then you wash your fingers and then wipe your mouth and then wipe it off on a napkin and you're considered clean. Like that. But that maybe there's no dirt, but it's very highly impure. So they're very, it's a subtlety. So then in that, then you have the subtleties of the mind. You know, and then what's proper, what's not proper. Then from there you start to see impure thoughts. Because in the beginning you don't really notice them. You've grown up with them. The mind throws out all kinds of crazy stuff. But you've always had that stuff. So, you know, you're not really interested in it. It just goes by, so you just leave it. So in the beginning you don't notice it. And then we say that, then we notice later, years later, then how come there's so many things in the mind? They were always there. Just that before we were so gross, we didn't notice them. But then with time, you start to notice them. Down to even just subtle things. Something is not even, just a little thing, a reaction that you make. Someone says something, you see something, and just what is the reaction that comes? You start to see it subtly. Just what is the seed that is there? Like that. And then, so that is, we have to work on that. That was in the introduction. When we finished through the first section, the first part, then we'll go back and go through these subtle points. Because there's been some, like, outlines made on the Nectar Devotion that get into the technical points. Mm-hmm. I figure we go over it first, just go through it. Means, because Prabhupada said you should read and you should study. So reading means you go through just chronologically from beginning to end and try to understand it. Then study means you go back over it by particular points, trying to bring out more light on a point, connect points that are there in different places and all that. That's study. So basically we'll go through here, then we'll go through that, and in there it'll get in. Basically it means you go back to the point of the seeds of pop. Means the four levels of pop. So you have the bija, you have kutam, you have phulan mukha, and you have prarabdha. So generally it's like bija is understood, it's the seed. Phulan mukha is basically understood, it's the situation before it. It has to be arranged. You know, if you're going to stub your toe, then everything has to be arranged, that there's something there for you to stub your toe on. And that at that moment you forget that is there, right? And then you stub your toe. So, and then when you actually stub the toe, that is prarabdha. That is the result. But what's very subtle point is very difficult to understand is kutam. Sometimes it's explained as sprouted. It means you have the seed, then you have that desire, it sprouts, then it grows like this. But it seems that the acharyas also give a point is that you create by your desire, by you have the desire, the bija, then that gives rise to the Phulan Mukha, the situation. That situation gives rise to the kutam, which means further sinful desire. Because that sinful, that situation will create more desires. That will create more situations, and all those give the result of prarabdha, of the fruit. So that is a very important thing. So that to be able to spot those seeds in the form that kutam, like that, is that we're in a situation and we see the seeds of desire starting to come up, like that, in an area or something, just by habit. And maybe even not even habit in this life, habit in previous lives. Right? Because we're controlled by all these planets. The gross and subtle bodies are controlled by these planets. These planets mature at different ages. So they give different results at different ages. So both the good and the bad come. Some come quick, some come later. So then situations that before you may not have noticed so much, because they're very small or very minor, come into more mature. So then they become more obvious, or different things like that. You know, just so many different things. Age also, and you know, so many things. How you look at it, how you see it, and everything like that. So all these add to this. So we have to be able to see those subtleties. So one of the easiest ways of dealing with that is both getting into the subtleties of the philosophy and into the subtleties of the culture in dealings and in cleanliness. Because from there, then you start to spot, you know, first you're spotting outside, and then by the subtleties of the deity worship, you spot inside. And then from there, by understanding the philosophy and the devotional process, one gets more and more expert at spotting the fine points, the anartas inside. Like that.
I think that is very important that come to the stage of goodness in order to spot them.
Yeah.
Because if you are in a passion, in you, sometimes you're so gross you can't feel.
Yeah.
You can't really see anything wrong with it. You know?
Yeah.
You are perfect.
Yeah. No, that's because Krishna highly recommends that. But he also points out so that for two reasons. One will not become discouraged, but one is not situated in goodness and one thinks I can't do devotional service. No, one can do devotional service even though one has not come to the platform of goodness. Whatever, if one does it for Krishna, sincere, it's accepted. Favorable devotional service, like that. So, but the mode of platform, the mode of goodness is the most favorable. And then from there, pure transcendence, that's the ultimate. And the other point is those who are more situated in goodness or situated in goodness, they shouldn't think that anybody below that can't do any devotional service. Like that. Is that even though they may be very much affected by the modes of passion and ignorance, they can still do devotional service as long as they do it for Krishna. Therefore, you train them, do it for Krishna. So you always push on the mentality first. You try to get that. Then when that's kind of like basically in place, you know, just the general principle that I do things for Krishna, then you can start, then that means they become a devotee. As a devotee, then naturally they have the qualities that they have the potential of brahminical quality. Then one can work on that brahminical quality. But until they've taken that, you can't take someone who is so much in the mode of passion and ignorance and train them in the mode of goodness. It's impossible. That's against the whole concept of varnashram. But when they take up devotional service, then they manifest, then they have the qualities of a Brahmin. Then they can be trained in that. Right? Just like a child has the qualities of a Brahmin. Doesn't mean it's fully manifest. Means he has the potential that you can train into a Brahmin. That's what is meant. So the Kanista has the potential and you can train. And then that will become more manifest at Madhyam and it perfects itself in Uttam as a pure devotee. Because a Brahmin means a devotee, one who knows Brahman. Like that. So then it works very, very nicely. But the consciousness must be worked on. Like that. So it's used in the beginning, just like we chant Hare Krishna. By chanting, it elevates us to the point where we start developing brahminical qualities. Then we take Brahminical initiation. Then that Brahminical initiation refines us so we can actually appreciate the holy name. You know, so that combination then works together. It keeps us from engaging in sinful activities. It brings us to goodness. And on that platform, we can understand very nicely the chanting. The chanting itself goes on like that, but it's a help. So in the same way as we give that initial consciousness that we are servants of Krishna, do everything for Krishna, then once that's there, then we're able to appreciate these points of cleanliness and all these different things that bring us to a more suitable platform by which we can be elevated.
What if somebody remains in the mood of passion? You explained about the Brahmana aspect. What if somebody who can understand that who is a Kshatriya, who is a Vaishya, who is a Sudra, and I don't know, he can be a devotee, he can be going back to God, he can perform devotional service, but not necessarily mean that he can elevate himself to the Brahminical level. There is such cases?
Yeah, see, Brahminical here, we're not talking necessarily about occupational. We're talking about qualities. Because you have a smarta who's following the rules. You cannot say that they're not Brahmins by qualification. I mean, they're very Brahminical. The cleanliness, how regulated they are, their determination, how strict they are on the vratas, and how simple they live, and you know, they all these things. Definitely Brahmins. One would have to grossly not understand what a Brahmin is to say that they're not. But they're not devotees. Right? So the perfection of Brahminical culture is devotional service. So if someone accepts devotional service, that means they're a Brahmin. Though they may not have the occupational qualities of a Brahmin, but they have the consciousness of a Brahmin. So the occupational qualities of a Brahmin are for the purpose of developing the devotional qualities. That's the natural mature stage. So if one already has that, then it doesn't matter what the occupational qualities are. So one is a Brahmin by quality, though one means consciousness, though one has the external, or let's say one has the occupational qualities of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Like that. Or even in some cases, one takes up devotional service, one is lower than Shudra. By occupational nature, you know. But by association devotees and by chanting, that comes up very quickly. So that's an important aspect. This is why there's the subtlety. Its subtlety is sometimes hard to understand because of this point of a chinta beda beda tattva. None of the other philosophies work on that. It's more clear. It's one. It's two. It's purified oneness. It's one, but it's in a purified. Or it's one, but it has its specialities. Or it's one, or it's two. You can look at it both ways. Right? But none of them say it's one and two at the same time. Like that. So therefore, the subtleties in our philosophy then are able to bring it to that high level of Braja Vrindavan. Because there the subtleties are the most great. Everywhere is subtle. Right? It's transcendental. But because the rules and regulations are there in all other realms, therefore, one is able to identify the places in that. But in Braja Vrindavan, it's just the rasa. And you have to understand what is correct and what is incorrect in the rasa, like that. So the subtleties are very, very fine. So you have to be able to see two things at once. Right? How is it Radharani is totally attracted to Krishna and overwhelmed in the platform of Mahabhav, that she's just out of separation is wanting to be with Krishna. When Krishna comes, she tells him to go away. So how do you understand that without this philosophy? It can't be understood in any other philosophy. It cannot be understood. Because it's either one or it's two. You know? But here, it's one and two. Right? She's the topmost devotee. The rasa dance is happening, but because Krishna is having a good time with all the other gopis, she leaves. So how is this happening? How are these contradictory things are happening? So contradiction makes taste. One thing makes a good taste, like you have a salty item. It's a good salty item. It has taste. But you also have taste where it's salty and it's sweet and it's sour. You know, it gives more taste. You know, like that. So that's the whole thing, to appreciate all those tastes. That's Vrindavan. So therefore, our philosophy. Therefore, the subtleties. So we practice those from this level of understanding cleanliness and all these things. One may say, well, that's fanatic. Prabhupada's sister, you couldn't touch anything. And she had a little pot of water she always kept with her. A little silver lota, you know, about like that, 2.5 inches high. A little spout on it. You know, you touch the floor, she'd call you over. You'd pour some on your hand. You had to be clean. She went into a bathroom. She was not overly fond of these modern bathrooms where you have everything in the same room. She would go into the toilet, come out of the toilet, go into the shower, wash her hands, feet, and everything properly, fill up buckets of water, wash the whole bathroom floor, because she walked from the toilet to the shower. That means the floor is contaminated. Now, if she takes a shower and walks out, she steps on the floor between the bathroom and the shower. You're dirty again. She washes the whole bathroom, goes back in, takes a shower, then comes out. This is Prabhupada's sister. So this was the standard in the house. So we may say this is fanatic, but this is just the aristocratic culture. What the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, they all did like this. This is the Vaishya culture. Because they're aristocracy, therefore they follow the principles of cleanliness like the Brahmins follow. Like that. So that's not fanatic. That's normal. Fanatic is, Prabhupada mentioned about his daughter, where she's throwing water inside the electric plugs because it's dirty inside. Like that. That Prabhupada called cleanliness disease. So he told his daughter, if she does that again, she'll kill him. Or her, whatever. So, like that. But that's fanatic. You know, because that's not. But where, you know, you're not touching inside. The floors you're touching, walls, places you sit, places you cook or sleep or bath, those are clean. You know, inside the plug, electric plug, that's no need. Like that. So the whole idea is by these platforms of cleanliness, it develops the mode of goodness. And it develops our subtle appreciation of what's going on. Then we're able to very much appreciate the subtleties of anartha nivritti and other important aspects of devotional service. You know, we can see the anarthas like that. Because they look the same. An anartha and the devotional creeper look the same. Like when you go into the rice field, the farmer can tell what is rice and what is weed. They look exactly the same. So you have to have the subtlety to be able to see just a slight difference in color or texture or size or the width of the leaf or the way the leaf kind of, you know, is, how it's, you know, configured. But just the first glance, it looks the same, you know. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said sannyasis can't take the car when they go to the doctor, you know. Like that. They said they could take the car to go preaching. They want to go to the doctor for all their, you know, what they call hypochondriac diseases, then they can walk. You know? So otherwise one will say, well, I'm preaching, I have to go to hell to take the car, this and that. He said, no, you walk. The car is for preaching. So otherwise it'll look like it's service, but it's not. You know? Like that. You know, so many times we'll find the mind will trick us. Oh, we should do this, we should do that. You know. Like I've seen, sometimes devotees are sick. The allopathic doctor has told them, eat. don't fast and, you know, like that, and they should eat rice or this. So Ekadasi succumbs and they have some problems, so they'll eat rice or chapati. The main problem is something should be in the stomach. You know, you have acid or you have so many other things. You can stick anything in the stomach. You know, it's like it's generally easily pleased. Stomach is easily pleased. It's the tongue that's the problem, but the stomach is generally, you know. Stomach worries about volume generally. You know. So, but the mind will say, no, it's important this and that. But just a very simple thing. You could just eat something else. You know, you don't have to eat. But the mind will say, no, 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 this, that, and so many things. So, it's very, very convincing. Right? Does that make any sense? Anything else?
The flavors of the philosophy come from the acharyas of the philosophy, like Madhvacharya was preaching Dvaita because it was different. He's Hanuman, his Krishna is different. As Ramanuja was preaching with Krishna, there is no difference because he was Ananta, and that Krishna is kind of the same.
Yeah.
So, depending, then you said that this Achintya Veda Viratava is the Vrindavan philosophy. So, whoever practices in this line will go to Vrindavan. It's like whoever is an ISKCON devotee will go to Vrindavan. Vaikuntha is like out of.
Not necessarily. Vaikuntha generally, one generally will go to Goloka by following the philosophy. But it's just a matter of whether there is a natural inherent attachment to the rules or not. Like that. Attachment to the rules means one's attached to the rule because it should be done in that way. Rather than one is just attached to Krishna and if Krishna likes it that way, then you do it that way. You like the formality that's created by the rules. It creates, in other words, it creates a form in which you can express your affection for Krishna. Like that. Because everybody wants to have an identity. And everybody needs to know what is the situation of exchange, what it's going to be. Right? Once that's clear, one's very comfortable. Right? Like, You go home and you visit your parents, so you see your father or you know, your mother. What do? Do you stand there and offer pranams, or do you shake their hand, or do you give them a hug, or what do? So if you don't really know what to do, it's great anxiety. You can't establish the relationship. So if you know how it'll be done and what's the accepted medium, then you're very happy. Right? You're very happy. So the whole idea is to establish the situation in which the exchange can take place. So for some devotees, they prefer the rules because they know this is the way it is. When Krishna comes into the court in Dwarka, then we stand up and then we say so many different things and then, you know, just how it goes. You know, it's just very, very orderly and like this and that. And then you can exchange with Krishna and all these. Like Krishna comes and that into the apartment of the queens, and they send the sun embraces Krishna, they embrace through the eyes. So then it's understood what is the rasa, like that, and then they know what to do. So then that's just the way it is. So this creates the culture, right? This creates the culture of Krishna consciousness. And that culture then comes down into the material world as the Vedic culture. Right? It's just how to establish a relationship. Like you get up in the morning, you know, you go offer your respects to your mother and father, you know, like this, and you clean yourself properly, bathe, decorate yourself, you do some spiritual activity, you know, go to the temple, something like this. Then, you know, after you go to the school, offer respect to the teacher, all these different things. And then, you know, you go back in the evening to the house and you may visit, see other family members, you offer them their respect. And then, so it creates an opportunity for relationship. Because now, child goes in and offers respect to the mother or father, they're not going to ignore, right? They may be busy doing whatever they're doing, but when the son walks into the room and comes over and touches their feet, immediately the relationship is established. And what is the relationship? You know, the child is respecting the parents because he is gaining everything from the parent. And the parent then is thinking of the welfare of the child. So the pat them on the head or embrace them or something. So a relationship is established. You know, and then afterwards they'll say, okay, now go get ready and like this, so it'll go back, but it establishes relationship. So the rule establishes relationship. That's what it's for. Like that. If we, when we take the rules out of context, where they're just rules, that's where you get the fanaticism, or we just drop them because it doesn't mean anything, right? So we may say, well, you know, Madhavendra Puri, was it? Madhavendra Puri? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says, you know, goodbye to my three times bath and my chanting of Sandhya Bandana, goodbye to this and that. But he's already, you know, manifesting the symptoms in his Surup Siddhi, like this, where he's just absorbed in bhava and he's performing service to Krishna in the spiritual realm. So relationship's going on. So he doesn't need the external rules and the material. He doesn't have to take his three times bath to keep in the mode of goodness so he thinks of Krishna. He's already in the pastimes. Therefore, he takes a bath, doesn't take a bath here. It doesn't matter. He'll be in the bath. He's taking a bath there. You know? You don't get that straight. The people who can say that are taking bath in the spiritual world. Right? They are following whatever is the etiquette of that realm. Right? They're following. But they don't have to follow here. But for us here, it's to establish that relationship. That's what it's for. Like that. Yes?
What is the limit of how one can educate a new devotee or a child, considering that what you are saying, that most important is to respect the devotional mood of the person, rather than try to impose upon them a certain standard of Brahmanical, you know, Brahmanical standard, if they are not going to raise to that standard, if they are not able to raise to that standard, then how should we find a limit to teach them so that we don't impose things upon them too much, so that they become frustrated, but still we, you know, I mean, like, what is your,
To understand what's the limit in dealing, main thing is that, I mean, the simplest thing is that what we are trying, asking them to do, we ourselves are either doing or willing to do. Right? Just like Prabhupada gives the example of temple president. So temple president's duty to do every service that there is in the temple. That's his duty. You know? But that will be highly impractical. So therefore, because of his good abilities in management, he organizes that others help in all these different areas so that more gets done. And the more people there are, the more that can get done. Like that. But otherwise, if there's no one there to do any of the service in the temple, they're willing to do it themselves because that is their responsibility. Like that. So if that mood is there, then naturally what happens is the person that you're associating with, if they like you because you deal with them in a personal way, they will naturally just either directly or indirectly, consciously or unconsciously, start to imbibe the qualities that are there in the person, you know, who is trying to help them. So that's the main point, is that what we're asking them to do is stuff we do. Like that. Then in that, then you have to see just what is their level to understand and try to get the point across. The main thing is the principle should be got across. And then, depending upon their situation and the detail to that much degree that they can follow, can be done. You know? So in children, you have a broad range. Very small children, you just do it for them. Like that. I mean, it's not like, you know, you have the, you know, the, whatever, the 9-month old kid is just sitting there very, very peacefully in that, waiting for the mother to dress them. No, at every time the mother lets go, the kid rolls over and starts to walk away. And then she has to grab and then put this on, sit him down and put this on. As soon as she goes to get something else and they crawled off that way, or they're already taking it off, or like that. So you just do it. And then just with time, then it becomes a habit. Subconscious habit, otherwise, how is it that anybody, whatever culture they grow up in, for them when they get older, that's the way things are done. That's the clothes, that's the language, that's the food, that's the relationships, that's the way they live. Like a child who grows up on the sidewalk, to them that's normal, you know? I mean, it's perfectly normal. You know, you see an old tire, I mean, that's great. It holds, you pick it up, it holds the roof down. The roof is an old plastic tarpaulin, or you know, anything that you can get your hands on, and then you throw tires on top of that to keep it from blowing away. It's normal. So they experience all the same rasas and everything. You know, this is their house. If someone comes and steals one of the tires off their roof, it's a big problem, you know, like this. So it's they experience all these things. That's what they know, because they've grown up in that environment. So it's very important, the creating of the environment, creating of the example, and then giving the teaching. So all must be there. The environment, the teaching, and the example. And if they all match, it's very dynamic. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else?
I didn't quite catch the environment part.
The environment means it's the environment helps a lot. Of course, if you have good example and good teaching, it can be done anywhere. But if you have a matching environment, it helps. Right? So you create an environment in which that can be done. Like the home. The home, there's example is there, and the training is there. But now if you have a place where it can be sheltered and everything nice, and you can keep all the paraphernalia you need for taking care and training the child, then that helps, right? If you're just, you know, out in the, walking around in the forest, it's more difficult, you know. Can be done, you know, in a more simple way. But it just depends upon one's nature than one is more simple or more elaborate environment. Also, how you keep the environment. If you're trying to teach the child cleanliness and the house is clean, then your personal example of how you deal with things in the house, you keep it clean. The house, the environment is clean, and the teaching, you're going through and systematically telling them how they have to be clean. You know? So like that. So it all matches very nicely. Yeah. That's why it's like the environment. You go to the dham. So the dham is the spiritual world. So then the devotees set the example of acting in transcendental activities, and they're teaching transcendental activities. And the dham itself, the situation is transcendental. It's more. It would be more difficult to teach someone Krishna consciousness down at the, you know, at a nightclub or something. You know, there's too many distractions. Well, if you create an environment where there aren't distractions. You know, the environment itself helps one remember the Lord, or creates the mode of goodness. That is there. We see Dwarka, explanation of Dwarka, very nice, beautiful gardens, and crossroads, and lakes, and, you know, very, very nice things. And that develops the finer brain tissues, because the whole purpose in the Vedic culture is with that finer brain tissues, use that to understand God. So the environment was like that. Then they had, what is it, 1,280,000, I think, or 240,000 acharyas for teaching and performing all the different rituals and activities for Dwarka, like that. So then they have them who are there teaching and giving the example and doing that. Plus they have the beautiful things. So like this, so they have the example, they have the environment, and then they have the teaching. So in this way, then Krishna consciousness can be very nicely taught. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else on this? No. Okay. No one should know. Number five, one should not enter the temple in a contaminated state. According to Vedic scripture, if someone dies in the family, the whole family becomes contaminated for some time, according to its status. For example, if the family is Brahmana, their contamination period is 12 days. For the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it is 15 days, and for Shudras, 30 days. So the point is here, contamination means is that the mind becomes contaminated. It's not so much that the body, that by taking bath and everything, then that is removed. Like after the person is taken to the burning ghats, they're burnt and all that, and then the ashes are put in the river, then one takes one's bath with the clothes on and everything. Physically one is purified then. But the difficulty comes is that there may be, due to lamentation, so many things in the mind, that one can go and stand in front of the deity, but instead of seeing the deity, one will see that departed family member. So therefore, we, depending upon their degree of attachment, therefore the contamination period is put at so many days. Like that. Another aspect is the lamentation may be so much is that one doesn't feel like doing anything. One doesn't feel like eating properly or dressing properly or cleaning properly or doing anything. One is, you know, very devastated. So there's also that aspect of just of how much time it takes before someone is able to properly function again. You know, sometimes something very traumatic happens. One has difficulty in just doing just normal things for some time. Like that, it affects everything. So during those times, it's recommended that then one doesn't go to the temple like that. It mentions here, you know, specifically for worshiping the Lord, for doing the puja especially. One may go and visit and all that, but one has to see. If one is able to see the Lord and not lament too much or cry or wail or roll on the ground or, you know, ask for too many material things that one normally wouldn't ask for, then one can go, no problem. But generally, during any time that kind of conscious mentality is there, for that time one shouldn't go into the deity room like that.
Sometimes, maybe people also blame the Lord.
Ah, so, yeah.
Why have you done this? I mean, why you are taking my husband and wife, whatever.
Yeah.
The relative, it was such a good show, this and that.
Yeah. Why do bad things happen to good people? Right. Yeah. Like that. So someone like that may have to wait longer than 30 days. 30 lifetimes. Yeah, that's a very good point. It's a very good point. Is that so that gives you time to just work that out, you know? Other people will say, and then... That's a very good point. Yes, what is it?
To go to the temple, wouldn't it, like, relieve you from the most...
That,
and then you become more transcendental?
It's like this. That is there. It's just like this. If, let us say, one is weak from not proper eating, then by getting a proper nutritious meal, that will get rid of that problem. But if the weakness is so bad, you eat that nutritious meal, it'll make you more sick. So you have to take something even much more light, you know? Some very, very light thing, a little fruit or a little just juice or a little soup, and then the body adjusts and you can build up. So it depends upon the state. If someone is nicely situated in Krishna consciousness, by going to the temple, that will help. By going, sitting in front of the deities and there, and then just like that, and relating to the Lord, then that will work out many things. But if you have situations like Ganga brought up, you're blaming the Lord, or you're so just distraught you can't even get anything together like this, or you're just constantly thinking of that person and can't think of anything else. So even if you went in front of the deities, you wouldn't be noticing the deities. You'd be thinking about that person. You'd be seeing when they died, what they looked like, and then what they were like before, and then the fire, and then, you know, throwing the ashes in the river. And all these things would be going through the mind. And then there's no advantage. Why sit there? You know, then Krishna has to look at you going through all those things and making all those faces and all that. You know, it's like you can sit somewhere else. He's in your heart. He sees them anyway. Like that.
It happened to new bhaktas too, that they're not, you know, conscious of Krishna and thinking of something else. So still we go to the temple and we come purified.
that's there, but generally it's how you say, it's slightly different because you're going and you're trying to, and those things are aside, while here it will be a preoccupation for some time. Like that. Only reason I bring it up is because Rupa Goswami's mentioned it, and then Prabhupada's taken the trouble. The point says one should not enter the temple in a contaminated state, and then Prabhupada, he mentions all this rest of the thing. He points out contaminated means this.
Yes.
Yeah, because then one's not in a contaminated state. Because here, contaminated, well, one can take it, one is contaminated means physically. Someone's just died, you're in that association, one's contaminated. One's physically, one has to take a bath and clean oneself. Because what we've been going through is the purity in your, how you say, no contamination of the purity in your mood. You're not going as a big person. You may be a big person, but when you come into the temple, you take the humble mood because the Lord's the biggest person. Then you don't not do these festivals because you're such a big person or so busy with this or that, because the festivals are made just for us. Right? Like that. Krishna's being served by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis. He doesn't need us. We need him. So he's made this situation so that we can take part. Right? We can come and pull the chariot. Right? The pastime in Kurukshetra is going on eternally. And the gopis themselves from Vrindavan are pulling it. We're being given the opportunity to do that service. So we should take it. We shouldn't think that it's more important to do this than that, you know? Unless there's some real emergency. But if it's not an emergency, just normal day-to-day activity, then we should be taking part. So that there's the proper understanding there. Purity in our engagement. Right? Then we see here, not bowing down, so that humility, that we actually see that we should properly bow down, and, you know, taking that first one a step farther. Then having, one has to wash the hands and mouth, so the body, we're going to enter, it should be clean. So that's just hands, mouth, and that after eating. Now, more serious than this is contamination from family member dying or some other contaminated state, where it contaminates the whole body. Like that, one has gone into the toilet with one's clothes on, like this. Then one has to take a bath, change those clothes, do all that before entering the temple. So this is talking about more serious contamination. Like that. So it's going, you know, it goes through these points of contamination, like that. Because these are offenses in deity worship, so that they will be connected with time and cleanliness. You know, or both. Like attending the festivals, that's in time, right? Because that is naimitta kriya. So that is what do you call it? That is something you do occasionally. You know, Jamashtami is once a year, Rath Yatra is once a year. It's not every day. Bowing down is every day. That's a nitya kriya. You know? But in these, they have their purpose of creating the cleanliness in the consciousness, in the body, in the, like this. So they're connected. They're connected. Like that. Because everything goes back to remembering Krishna, not forgetting. So it all goes back to the mind. Mind's pure, you remember Krishna. Mind's not pure, you don't. So by purifying the externals and by regulation or time, that creates the purity of the mind that we think of Krishna. Does that make some sense?
I don't know, I just heard it. I have seen people following that if you wear a woolen gamcha, then you ease yourself, then you don't have to talk about
it. It's specifically for Brahmins. That's one thing. I would say that if someone is Brahmin, has Brahminical qualities, knows how to be clean, is happy to take a bath after going to the toilet. But due to an emergency, like one is just about to start the puja and one has to go to the toilet, or one is doing the puja and one has to go to the toilet, in emergency situations it would be used. Or you're cooking and then you have to go like this. But if the person doesn't like to take a bath after and has found a loophole, that person is 101% unqualified to use it. Because that's not the purpose. It's not a loophole. It's how you can maintain the standards of cleanliness and maintain your time and everything in your puja. But it's not considered first class. It's second class. Because you should have taken a bath, but due to time, you're not doing it. And it's not magic. It's not that you wore this wool gumsho so you don't have to clean your backside. You don't have to wash your feet. You don't have to wash your mouth. You don't have to wash your hands. If you weren't careful and when you turned on the tap in the toilet and then the water hit the bottom of the bucket and splattered all over you, you're magically not dirty. No, this is for you have ruminical quality. You know when I touched my leg or when I stuck my finger in my ear. And therefore, you're cleaning your hands as you're doing the puja. So you have that subtlety. So when you're in the toilet, you know, did I touch the wall with my elbow? You know, as I'm squatting on the seat, did my back touch the toilet seat? You know all these things. Because if I did, I have to wash that part of my body. It's not the magical gumshoe keeps me clean. That's why I mentioned the beginning. It's not some magic. Specifically on this point, because it's an idea that I wear this magical woolen gumsha, I don't have to take a bath. But that's only if you know cleanliness. Then it works, because technically when you pass stool, hands, mouth, anus, genital, and feet become contaminated, right? So this means also the genital is being washed. Most people use the toilet at least in the West, they don't think about the genital being washed. They'll wash the anus, but not the genital. So after passing stool, anytime you pass urine, which generally is a common phenomenon when you pass stool, the genital also has to be washed. So if they're not washing that, then their magical woolen gumshoe didn't do any benefit for them. They're still unclean. Hands, mouth, feet, genital, anus have to be washed. Then one is clean after passing through, because skin by nature is clean. But if it touches anything dirty, it becomes dirty. So if one is very careful, then the wool gumsha doesn't become contaminated by air. So when one goes into the toilet, the air is contaminated. So the wool gumsha is not contaminated. So when one goes out after cleaning, after saucha kriya, cleaning properly everything, then when you go to and take off that gumsha, then your hands don't become dirty. Then you can pick up your cloth and put it on. Well, if you wear a regular gumsha, the gumsha becomes contaminated. So when you touch it to take it off, your hands are contaminated. And then wherever you put it, it's contaminated. And then your hands, whatever you touch, are contaminated. So therefore, one takes a bath. Because there's nothing, no other way one can really get around it. So that is the tattva of the woolen, the magical woolen gumsha. So it is a boon for pujaris in emergency situations, or if someone is very sick or something like that. But if someone's sick, or it is night or something, then it's recommended you take bath only from the waist down, because that's generally the area that's contaminated. So if it's nighttime or one's sick, one can't take a full bath. One just from the waist down. And then one doesn't have to worry about a full bath. If you're healthy, full bath, the timings are right, full bath, like that. Except at night. Even healthy at night, a full bath should not be taken. Like that. Generally, it's not good for health, a full bath at night. Putting cold water on the head at night can create a fever. Of course, one could ask, well, what about hot baths, you know, so one could do, but then if one doesn't end with cold, it's kind of leaves the pores open and it's not so good, you know. So it depends upon the season. Maybe in this season you could take a bath at night and get away with it, you know, for these few months, you know, like that. But once it cools in the morning, and then it's like the time's over. So like 2 months, one can do many, many things that one doesn't do in other seasons. Like that, because of the heat. Like that. Yes?
In this time, we are sweating a lot. And sweat is considered dirty. So in this case, can we say that the whole body, the skin is permanently...
It depends. If it's just a little bit, then that's one thing, because it's even one takes a bath and one goes into the duty room, one may sweat there also. But if one has been sweating for, it's come to the point of, you know, it's a historic sweat, to the point where it's starting to, you know, how you say, mature in its age, you know, then at that time, then better one takes a bath. And those clothes that one is wearing wants to change. But if one is sweating during puja and all that, sweat is considered one of the six light things. That, like, your arm is sweating, you touch your arm, you simply have to wash the hand, and that's all. Like that. It's in the light six. The light six. It's not in the category of stool, urine, you know, how you say, pus, blood, you know, marrow. All these are, like, really heavy stuff, you know.
Does this contamination also include when the Vaishnavi they have the period not going to the temple? It's a controversial thing.
I see. So, wanted to add some spice to the.
No, I know there are different people following different.
Yeah,
people,
that's so the important thing, is the different people should be happy with the different people following different things. When it's Atmavan Manyate Jagat, that's where the problem starts. So. The tradition let us put it this way, in the Brahminical tradition, actually even just any of the aristocracy, but especially in the Brahminical tradition, is because there was no lack in those days, you know. So they used to have in the house a separate place in the house where the ladies would go at that time. And they had their own kitchen, their own facilities, everything was there. And they could just go there and they wouldn't have to worry about anyone. They get a 3-day paid vacation. They don't have to cook for anything, they don't have to clean, they don't have to do nothing. They just have to sit there and, you know, whatever, survive like that, survive their mind, right? And then the men would take care of the house. They would do the cooking, they would do the cleaning, they would do everything like that, you know. So that would be the tradition. They wouldn't touch anything clean. They wouldn't go in the kitchen. They wouldn't do any of these things because they would become contaminated. So that would be the tradition. So they prefer not to go to the temple at that time also. So that would be the training. So if someone's trained in that way, then that is a tradition. There's no problem in it because one can worship in one's house. One can keep pictures. One can do like this. One can chant. You know, like that. So one takes the opportunity for these items. If one is not accustomed to these things, and by sitting at home one would just totally get in Maya, then better than they go to the temple, you know, take a bath nicely, everything, and then go to the temple. But they should be very careful where they move in the temple, don't touch anybody, stay out of the way. So the whole point is go there for darshan. That's the point being made. So darshan means darshan. Doesn't mean that one can go into the Didi room, can go off here and there, go into the back looking for Mahaprasad, walk up to the Bajari, start talking to them. It said a lady on the first day, the glance can kill a pure Brahmin. Like that. Because the emotions that are created from the hormones are so heavy that a very, very pure Brahmin can actually be killed by just seeing that. It's just so heavy. So, you know, like that. You know, in this age, I'm not sure you have to worry about such pure Brahmins, but...
They already all died.
Yeah. They're all finished off at the end, yeah. So the whole idea is that one stays out of the way. It gives rise as an opportunity of contemplation, meditation, how we got into this world. And that we're here, we're not supposed to be here. You know, the material world is not a nice place. And so it's not a matter of, how you say, all these things we mentioned before, they're all for purposes of developing relationships. So here is the opportunity that one can surrender to Krishna. That here's the situation in which one feels that due to one's, you know, improper consciousness, we are in a situation in which this comes up, right? So that aspect is there, so we use that to advantage. Devotees use everything to advantage. Doesn't matter what happens. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he has his demoniac father giving him so much, he uses it to advantage. He just remembers Krishna. He doesn't become bitter or nasty or this or that, or why Krishna's not taking care, I surrendered to him, I did this. He uses it to advantage. So in the same way as these situations come up, and then they're used to advantage. So one tries to increase one's Krishna consciousness through that humility, contemplation, and becoming sensitive and aware. You know, one becomes more aware of what is clean, what's not clean at this time. Before one may or may not have been so aware, but one is able to become more aware of these things. And then during this time, the point is that contamination is there, but as we see in that, then the men aren't, you know, then, you know, saying all nasty comments and this and that. But they're taking care, the way, they don't have to worry about these things. The men will do everything. They'll cook, you know. They'll do, of course.
They become aware of how much time it takes.
And then they became aware of what it takes to take care of the house, right? You know, so then they appreciate what's going on, right? I heard, I think it was, what is it? Your brother-in-law, he told me he learned to cook because of this.
Right.
Because for those 3 days, none of the women would cook. So then he and his father, yeah, that was it, right? He and his father had to cook. There were no other brothers, right?
Right.
No, there was no brother. Yeah. So they had to cook. Yeah. They cooked, they cleaned the house, this, that, and they would have to do everything. So then, like that, then it balances out. And then one sees. But if it is just used as a tool to make it look bad on the women, then that's not the purpose of it. It's not the purpose at all. You know, because one who will speak on like that way and think in that way, then it's just the opposite of attraction. So then, you know, they will be the next group in the saris. like that. Does that make any sense? That's like that. So one can follow either, but it shouldn't be that those who who prefer going to the temple should speak badly about those who say that they won't. Because that level, that fineness of culture of those who don't want to go, those who demand it's their right to go, just by that demand, the subtleties that are accomplished in the other are missed. Like that. So one should, you know. Otherwise, if it's like that, then it makes life very easy. All we have to do is get, you know, white saris with a red border, you know, saying 1-inch red border, and that's what everybody wears. You know? Then everybody's supposed to be the same. It's very easy, right? I mean, you go into the villages, that's what they all wear, right? You know? So then it makes it, but they're not. Everybody's an individual. They have their tastes, they have their this and that, and what is best for them is another. So what's good for one is not necessarily good for another. Like that. Yes.
One time you had this list of places you should wash after going to the toilet, and one time I heard the Sika mentioned.
The Sika? I never heard of the Sika. The question is in the list of places to clean after going to the toilet, he had heard that the Sika was on the list. I had never heard the Sika. The Sika doesn't...
You have to open your Sika when you take a bath.
Yeah, maybe when you take a bath.
You have to open your...
Then you open the Sika, take out any dirty hairs, everything like that. That's another thing. You may have mixed that up with... Because it comes around the time of Saucha Kriya. Saucha Kriya, you go to the toilet, then you clean yourself. Then before the bath, generally you comb the hair. Because you comb before, it takes out all the dead hair and everything. Then you take the bath. Then the combing afterwards is just to put it in order. Like that. So the combing afterwards is just part of getting ready. You know, but the one before is actually cleaning. So maybe someone, because it came after Saucha Kriya, they thought it was part of it. Because they saw the bath is the bath, and then before that is combing the hair, the Sika. Then before that is washing the hands, mouth, and everything after going to the toilet. So that may be how the Sika God is part of the. I would be like that. I'm always amazed at how new rituals or everything get developed from these kind of misunderstandings. See, the whole process is very scientific. There's a purpose behind everything, and there's details of application of everything, and that art of application. And behind the purpose, there's philosophy. So if one knows from the philosophy to the purpose to the detail and how to apply that detail, it's complete. And that is that's the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness. If one doesn't, then one starts to make things up or this or that or do all kinds of things, which one has to avoid. Because you see that when you know the purpose and that, there is no controversy. It accommodates everybody. The purpose is, this like we did the one before, a big controversy before. I mean, it was at least a couple of years back, 2 years back, it was a raging international controversy. You know, can the ladies go in the temple or not? You know, and Prabhupada's here, Prabhupada never said so many things. But he did when Jamuna came to India, he's told her, you learn from the Indian women, and they weren't like, you know, how you say, shaved up Vaishnavi women, you know, like that. These were just Indian aristocratic ladies. He said, learn from them, go back and teach all the other ladies. So it's right there in the Leelamrita. So the point is these cultures are there. So because he didn't mention that point, normally that point would not be mentioned. It's not a topic of, normally of, you know, general discussion. Like that, because whatever it is, Ganga Das and his has brought it up just to add some excitement to this evening's class. But the point is you see that those who don't want to go to the temple, they have their reasons and ways that it will make them Krishna conscious. Those who do have their ways and reasons that will make them Krishna conscious. They can go side by side. But when the ladies that say that they go to the temple and all the others are in Maya, you know, then this is called uncultured. This is what the Bhagavatam or Narad Muni describes as Shankara, which means mixed varnas that are below the level of Shudra, who don't understand culture. And the same point they'll use on everything, right? I mean, just last year, If the wife was very comfortable in the house and working cooperation with the husband and let the husband take the lead, it was said that this is improper. This is just conditioning thousands of years of Indian male chauvinistic, you know, dealings and all that, and it's improper and they shouldn't listen and they should do their own thing and all this and that. And because of this, then it's like women who are trained like that, happy with that, comfortable with that, are made to feel uncomfortable. So who's the chauvinist? Chauvinism means that you lord it over someone else. So it doesn't matter. The Shastras always talk about the jiva in the material world is he. It never says she. Never. They always say he. Because the jiva, though it's female, in the material world always acts as a male. It means trying to dominate, control, and enjoy. It's just the nature of the living entity in the material. So it doesn't matter, male or female, it's just that's what everybody's doing. So only when we get down to the pure philosophy, the tattva, then we understand that the living entity is female. And that everything except for Vishnu tattva is female. So all manifestations, the dham and everything that are happening, is all female. So only Krishna and Balaram and all the and Balaram's expansions, they are male, the enjoyer. And even Balaram and all his expansions have both a dual role. They are the Lord and they are the servant. So therefore, only Swayam Krishna, Braja Krishna, is the full manifestation of maleness. Like that. He is simply enjoying. That's all. That's the tattva. Otherwise, but in the application of the material, everybody's called male. So it doesn't matter how it's coming. So the rules are there. The Vedic culture is just there so that nobody takes advantage. Now, if somebody misuses those rules, that's wrong. But if someone throws out those rules, that is also wrong. That cannot be forgiven either. Just because we are born as Mlechas and Yavanas doesn't give us the right to criticize or throw out the Vedic literature. It's against the ten. It's one of the offenses of the holy name, and it's one of the points that Rupa Goswami, you know, makes in the Upadeshamrita. One cannot go against the Shastra. Shastra is always correct. Our understanding and application, that may be wrong. So we have to be very, very careful here in these things. So the point is the Vedas are taking care of everybody very nicely as long as we understand how to apply it. As soon as we misuse it for our own purposes, it creates trouble. So if there's been trouble in the past, that's been misapplied. But that doesn't mean that misapplication now will correct it. You correct it by proper application. So therefore, whoever's comfortable in whichever way, let them do that. But don't let them bother others. Like that. As soon as for me to do my service, I have to make everybody else feel uncomfortable, that means there's something wrong. Right? The head to do its service doesn't make the arms, the stomach, or the legs feel uncomfortable. Right? The mouth speaks or eats. Do the arms or hands or legs feel uncomfortable? No. The head decides it's going to walk, then there's going to be a problem. Right? Or if this head decides it's going to do the digestion, so you put something in the mouth, it chews it up and then doesn't swallow, then there's going to be a problem. So if there's a problem, that means it's not being done properly. Because otherwise the body works perfectly together. So the varnasha works perfect. So if something's not working perfectly, that means we're not using it properly. That's all. So that's the point. It means if someone's been uncomfortable, there's been something wrong. But we have to look back to the system to find out what is right. We can't make up our own idea. It still has to come from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? Means there's been... See, the point is if material situations fixed material problems, then we would have been happy unlimited lifetimes ago. But we've surrendered to Krishna because we have not been able to get solutions to our problems. So only spiritual solutions can solve material problems. Like that. Material never does. It hasn't. So how can we have faith now? Right? Like that. So that means if there's something wrong in relationships, you know, either between the men and the women, between, you know, leaders and the followers, between the temples and the communities, you know, but whatever it may be, between husbands and wives, parents and children, teachers and students, that means that there's been some misapplication. Otherwise, it would be perfect. It's thought out by the Lord, so it's perfect. Whatever comes from Krishna is perfect. And the acharyas tell us what to do. So now it's just a matter of us following and understanding. Then it works perfectly. Like that. You understand? Everybody, because as I mentioned before, we have to always go back to this point, is that the rules are there for establishing relationship and establishing exchange. So by following the rules, the relationships and exchange has been broken down. That's a misapplication. You understand? So therefore, anything that we would call an issue, it only becomes an issue out of not properly applying it. Or taking it out of context, or using it materially like this. You know? And if we are also to accept that everybody's an individual, then what's good for one person is not good for another person. You know? It's just not. You know? Neither in dress, neither in food, you know, neither in living. You know, so many things. It's everybody's different. So that the Varnashram accommodates this. So we have to see that it is establishing these things like that. Then it's very nice. Then we see that there's no problem. Right? Like here, you have mother in the house is contaminated. And then the son is doing the cooking and making the arrangements for the mother. That doesn't establish relationship. Son is cooking for the mother. It doesn't establish something. Right? You don't have to have Mother's Day. Right? 3 days a month do you have Mother's Day. Right? You understand? Artificially, you don't have to create something. It's just there. You know, and as is pointed out, is that by doing those things, then the men of the house appreciate very much more what the women of the house are doing. You know, because they may take it for granted. They go out all day, they come back, the place is clean. But to make it clean, it took hours. So when you have to do it yourself, you start to realize what's going on. So all these things establish relationship. Right? They establish relationship, they establish respect, they establish purity. And these are all essential items, you know, in devotional service. Honesty, right? Honesty. I'm so wretched. I've gotten myself in the position where we're contaminated in this way. Right? It's due to our desire that we got ourselves into this position. So, being honest, we understand how foolish we are. You know, how we've become overwhelmed too much by material desire. Then that creates that. And we're able, and by saying that before the Lord, then so much advancement is there. The Lord reciprocates so strongly. Like that. Very strongly. We see the whole situation is there. Draupadi, that whole thing when she was dragged into the court, that's what was going on. She was in that period of contamination. Therefore, she was in her own place. Otherwise, they're in the court. You know, she might come, the other ladies, or she would be up in the top watching. You know? But she wasn't. She was in her own room. And queens don't wear one piece of cloth. You know? I mean, they wear more cloth than anybody. You know? Especially from that part of India. You know? You go and you see, like in the Rajasthan Museum, what the queens were wearing before. Their skirts, I don't know, I would think you'd have to take at least a couple of saris to make one skirt. That's the skirt. The sari is another thing. Like that. The pleats are so heavy. They can sit down and put the skirt out and it can make a complete full circle and still have pleats in it. Right? Like that. So heavy is the cloth. That's the skirt. Then you have all the other clothes and all these things and this and that and tons of cloth. So she's sitting in one piece of cloth, bus. Why? Because of this. So that's why it was even more annoying to her that she's dragged out into the assembly. You know, one, she's contaminated, so she doesn't want to be seen in public. Two, you know, then she's in a state with only one piece of cloth on. I mean, it's like, you know, who are these, you know, these low-class people? You know, her mind, these aren't Kshatriyas. You know, Kshatriyas don't do this. This is the lowest scum of the earth. Like that. Therefore, she said, you know, I'll take bath standing on Dushasan's head, then I'll tie my hair. Right? Because generally they take full bath after the contamination period and then they tie their hair. She's going to do that standing on his head, right? The head won't be connected to the body, mind you. You know, that's the first prerequisite. So the head should be without the body, right? So only a Kshatriya woman could do that, you know? So, but the point is these are there, and it adds to the whole flavor. So it wouldn't have been so much, I mean, you know, it would not have been easy to, you know, the whole pastime of of disrobing Draupadi would have had a whole different flavor if they had just caught her from, you know, the balcony with the other queens or something. You know? But here it is, one piece of cloth, that's it. And you have this big, you know, whatever it is, monster, low-class kshatriya pulling on it, on her cloth, and she's, you know, very nice kshatriya woman. There's no comparison in strength. So she just has to surrender to Krishna. You know? She only has, you know, one cloth to hide behind. She doesn't have, you know, tons of cloth and ornaments that the kshatriya women have. One cloth. So therefore, it creates so intense the situation of that rasa of Krishna saving her. So this would only happen because of this. So if that practice wasn't being followed, this pastime wouldn't be as great a pastime as it was. So glorified because of the surrender that is there of Draupadi, that full surrender. Right? So this is the point, is that the culture gives rise to rasa. That's the whole point of it. Right? Yeah. And because of the culture, then her husbands had lost the gambling match, so they can't say anything. And, you know, Duryodhana and that definitely aren't saying anything. They're encouraging Dushasan. And Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, they're not saying anything because they're being fed by Duryodhana. Right? So therefore, what is she only has Krishna. She has one piece of cloth and she has Krishna. That's it. So it's a very heavy situation. We may breeze through it lightly. Oh, I've heard that. But if we think of the emotions of what's going on, and I've only described part of them, there's a lot more is there. So, I mean, the heaviness of the situation because of the whole culture and the pastimes that are going on, then make the depth of the relationships and the pastimes. Does that make any sense?
Srila Prabhupada says in the first canto how
more loudly?
Bhishma and Drona couldn't say anything because it is part of the culture that they are the part of the court. Also Kripacharya actually, when the Pandavas were in exile, he was supposed to be looking after the Pandavas on Dhritarashtra's order. Huh. So it's like totally on the Pandavas' side. But it is part of the culture that nobody can speak against the king. And at that time, the king was Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, because the Pandavas lost everything they had. So they couldn't speak up against the king.
Uh-huh.
So they had to sit in the court and just look and just be fried.
Yeah. So these things are there. So then the pastimes go on. Because the point is the... what's right and wrong is what is good for Krishna consciousness and what is not good. So that is the point. Okay. Anything else on this point? Or? No? Okay, so we'll end here. And then we'll continue with these offenses. Then, today is what, Tuesday, on Thursday. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Anitha Gaur Kainanandi Hare Hare